2005, which is the budget for the ORTDC. And so the budget was all hung up until we got our hands on this little bill, which we now have. We were going to amend this little bill. Mr. Jones will describe our plans.
Mr. Chairman, the
concern I think that was expressed was primarily dealing with the sunset provisions for this particular agency, and also the exemption of the agency from the administrative provisions of the Oregon Revised Statutes as they relate to the operations of state agencies. The bill, as it came to you from T&E, basically left the agency under budgetary law. That is, that they would submit a budget to the executive department, and that the executive department would forward that budget as part of the governor's recommended budget to the legislative assembly for review and approval. But then it goes on to exempt that same agency from all of the other provisions of law, and you'll find that in Senate Bill 282 in the B engrossed version, Section 2, to state that Chapters 240 through 293, with one exception, do not apply to the agency. We've reviewed those chapters of state law in relation to not exempting them from budgetary review, and we see no compelling reason for exempting the agency from the provisions of public contracting, of facilities management, of financial accounting, of personnel rules, the setting of salary of officers and employees, etc. So we've In the draft amendments, we've made them again subject to the laws governing state agencies within this state. The second amendment, found on page 5, and I hand engrossed the amendments because it was an oversight, in that specifically on page 5, line 27, the bill had provided for treating the salaries of the employees and officers of the agency as exempt rather than as putting them into the unclassified service. When under the unclassified service, they are subject to executive department and legislative review. Under exempt service, they would not be as far as the salary setting process is concerned. So we have deleted the bold material and brought them back as they stand under existing law as part of unclassified service. And the third change, of course, is to enact a sunset date of June 30th of 1991, which is 4 years hence.
Which is a considerable compromise. Since when, before we talked about a two-year sunset, this means they'll be back wanting his large slice of the lottery pie
again next session.
Exec?
You're going to tell me how you like these amendments.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the executive department would agree to those amendments.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
I have the co-chairs. I assume that you did the negotiations because this has been worked out at quite some extensive. So are both co-chairs of the T&E, they're...
All co-chair, well, Senator Cohen is fine. Representative Frobisch was okay. He finally let go of my arm just a little before lunch and stopped beating on me.
Okay. I would move the amendments.
Senator Hannon moves the -7 amendments as further hand engrossed, dated 6/18/87, be amended to Senate Bill 282.
Chairman, put some under the budgetary.
Keeps them under the budget controls of the state. Hearing no objections, then that's ordered. Then I think the bill is ready to go on out. Mr. Embry?
Mr. Chairman.
Any problems?
Mr. Chairman, there's a few of the exemptions that were there for a specific reason. The bill was introduced.
Oh, that's already happened, Bill. No, any problems further than that?
Pardon?
We just put it back the way it was, essentially, right, Ken, in terms of exec oversight, and it's got, let's see, personnel and general services.
Maintaining it the way it was when it was enacted in 1985.
Yeah.
There were some exemptions that they're interested in terms of maintaining client counsel privileges,
and
that's taken care of. They're still keeping those.
Yes. Mr. Chair, there are a couple of other exemptions, however, that the Trade and Economic Development Committee placed in there specifically that would enable us a clearer path to obtaining and managing private funds for ORTDC. And specifically, those are ORS 293, which is managing, handling, and distributing and receiving funds.
Reverend Jones.
What are considered private funds?
This only deals with public funds and the public funds that are in the...
I know. I'm trying to find out what are the private funds.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, under ORTDC structure, if we manage, if funds are granted to us or assigned to us to manage, we want to make sure that it's clear that those are indeed separate from the state, from any state funds, and are
lottery funds considered state funds or private funds?
Yes, sir, they are. And this would be a separate account. The funds in order.
Somebody provided you with some upfront money to do something, and some private industry that wanted to match some money that you may have, that would be considered private funds.
Mm. Mr. Chair, President Jones, yes, those would be considered private funds if they were put into the corporation for the corporation's management. Our understanding of that statute is those are also at that point considered state funds, since they are part of a state agency's
but
program.
If they intermingle with state funds, then it'd be pretty hard to separate the management of the private.
You can account for them.
If they're intermingled with state funds.
Jones?
That shouldn't present a problem for the agency.
It's an accounting problem, isn't it?
It may not even be an accounting problem. Accounting systems are easily set up to handle that type of thing.
From the standpoint of an oversight, a legislative oversight of what they're doing with the money, our money. Private money, that's somebody else.
Well, it's still, when it goes into a state account, I think we just would track it, right, Mr. Jones?
That is correct.
That's all.
The client agency privilege would still be able to be maintained.
Still have control over
the state. Mr. Chairman, that's never been an issue.
Yeah, so?
Our concern is with the
well, do you want your budget or not?
Yes, sir, we do.
Do you want me to talk about a phone call you made to one Kathy Schrock and the contents of it on the record?
No, sir.
Very good. Okay. Senator Hannon moves Senate Bill. Representative Jones.
Yeah. Just one other. The question is, has been before us of the statutory provisions or the constitutional provisions of the lottery money, 16%, they've been a couple million dollars over that a couple of years. So I think
everything okay?
Both this one?
Good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
introduce the
no.
Yeah, but I won't remind right.
Representative Jones continues to be concerned that the lottery our commission exceeds the 16% that is expected to run on, and I would mention that there was a provision for it to pay back what it owes.
Yeah,
if they ever do. So it's
No motion.
Senator Hannon moves Senate Bill 282 as amended to the full committee with the UPS recommendation. Objections are none, so ordered.
Carriers.
Will be. Senator Hannon? On 282, and then on the floor we'll have maybe I better do it then.
I can carry it to the Senate as well.
Okay. Actually, Senator Cohen would probably carry it. She was
okay,
more agreeable.
Fine.
We'll
yeah.
ask her.
All right.
Then we'll go to the budget and open our work session on House Bill 5005. And in there, Mr. Johnson, do you have some recommendations?
Mr. Chairman, this committee took tentative action on this budget pending receipt of 282 and pending completed action on Senate Bill 964. And as you know, the Senate Bill 964 does provide funds for ORTDC for lending capital for the 1987-89 year, as well as the carryovers from 85-87. There were only two concerns that we had expressed in the last review by this committee, was that if they were going to go ahead and not phase down during this biennium, and if they were in fact going to have a full loaf of the 964 monies, then they probably, the staffing ratio that they have right now, the due diligence work that would be required of them in order to put these monies out, probably justifies the staffing level that they're talking about. The questions that we had raised about were the two areas in terms of technical assistance for contract help and for the out-of-state travel component of their budget that they had identified in the presentation to you. The staff should have the ability to develop the expertise, I think, with a minimum level of outside help in terms of additional technical assistance. That's not to say that there may not still be some need for professional services beyond those that the staff can develop for itself, but that the $48,000 that's been identified perhaps is higher than may be needed over the biennium.
Reverend Jones. We used to have sheets, but that was before Bill started moving so darn fast.
Right.
We can.
But Kim has talked about 994, which isn't even in the bill.
$964. That's the lottery bill, and it allocated $3 million for ORTDC for 1987-89.
Here it is. Did you have some LFO recommendations?
I think that they could at least get along on half the professional services monies that they're talking about. We still haven't seen the justification for the out-of-state travel, especially in the early phases of the agency's existence. They had placed in their budget for out-of-state travel $4,600.
Mm-hmm. So you're suggesting zeroing that out?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And going with half of what they asked for in terms of professional services.
Which would be
$24,000. That's correct. I think that they did have one problem that we didn't resolve in state government service charges, which they had budgeted only $3,000 for, Wayne. What was there a revision to that?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Jones, it's running right now about $12,000 for a buy-in.
All right. Staff certainly would recommend that.
Is that like AG services too?
Mr. Chairman, no. AG is accounted for separately.
Okay.
Those are.
This is for accounting for general services,
okay,
for all the various government service
right.
charges. They have been running higher than agencies have been estimating. They do have $50,000 in this budget for attorney general charges. The attorney general will be the attorney of record for them, and there are many services that AG will be called upon to provide.
Yes. So we don't. Because I recall the AG question.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So the LFO recommendations are.
It would be a net reduction of $16,600 from their budget.
$16,600?
That's correct.
Can they live with that, Carla?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the executive department supports the governor's budget, but if the agency feels they can live with that, the executive department would go along.
Mr. Chairman, at this point, with 8 months operating experience.
Okay, well, the chair would move the LFO recommendations, reducing the budget by $16,600 as discussed.
$28,600.
By reducing it?
Yes, sir. 28,600.
28.
No, wait a minute. 28,600 minus 9. $19,600.
What the chair meant to move was LFO recommendations resulting in a reduction of $19,600. Objections to that? Hearing none. So ordered. I think this budget's ready now.
Mr. Chairman, yes. We do not have a final figure on the other funds limitation for this budget, net of 964.
Well, because it hasn't passed yet. But you can assume it will pass with three...
No, it's just a calculation effort that we have to go through. We don't want to take the committee's time to do that
good.
Now. The amendments to this bill will reflect your action today, the action of the limitation included in 964, plus the carry forward of ORTDC funds from 85-87.
Does the subcommittee understand that?
And Mr. Chairman, why don't we just pass it out? Mr. Jones can make the adjustment once 964 is... Where is it at?
Is no, 964 is not the problem. It's to make sure that the 964 funds are not in this budget.
Right.
Okay. Why don't we just pass it out and conceptually Mr. Jones can reduce whatever he has to do.
Senator Hannon then moves House Bill 5005 as amended by the subcommittee and subject to technical revisions as determined necessary by the legislative fiscal office to the full committee with the new pass recommendation. Objections? Hearing none. So ordered.
Chairman Carriers.
I'll talk later about that. Now we'll do veterinarians. Open public hearing on Senate Bill 180. Ms. Thorne, thank you.
Make sure that the executive department still supports the fees that they'd initially proposed.
Welcome. Hello. Care to identify yourself and briefly describe?
Representative McCracken, members of the committee, I'm Angela Ellaby, the executive secretary of the Veterinary Board. To my right is Gordon Cunningham, chair of the OVMA, Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, Political Action Committee. And to my left is Katie Thorne, whom you probably all recognize. We are here in support of Senate Bill 180. It is a bill which has been 4 years in the making, and we think we have wrung every iota of controversy out of it. We have a board of 7 members, one of whom happens to be a cattle rancher and a former senator. His name is Sam DeMint, and we went over the sections concerning cattle ranchers, and he found no objections to him, found nothing objectionable to him. We are here today in the Ways and Means Committee because Senate Bill 180 allows the establishment of fees for certifying euthanasia technicians. These fees are not spelled out in the statute itself.
I sure wish you hadn't said that part about Political Action Committee, mm-hmm. And I want you to know that doesn't influence me one little bit or any member of this subcommittee, and we won't want to hear those words again. Okay. Yeah?
I think that we should make sure that the executive department is still in support of the fee structure as was proposed in the governor's recommended budget, and I have distributed the applicable pages of that to members of the subcommittee, just for the record.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the record. My name is Katie Cohen, Executive Department Budget Analyst. Yes, we are in support of the fees that are included in Senate Bill 180, which support the governor's recommended budget and which has consequently been approved by the legislature.
Now, Senator Hannon.
I'd like to add my support on this. I know that Angela has been working on this issue in the board of veterinary examiners have been working on this issue for a long time. I had a constituent started an effort to help in the humane disposition of unwanted animals rather than using decompression chambers and that sort of thing. That's how this legislation came out. The veterinarians have worked. This now allows them to collect the fee to use the euthanasia process and injections to dispose of the unwanted animals, and that's what this first is all about. And I totally support it, and when you get ready, I'll be glad to make the motion.
Okay. Anybody else need to testify on this bill? Okay, I'll close the public hearing. Open work session. Senate Bill 180. Thank you, Senator, and that clarified the bill a lot.
Okay. Ways and Means Committee is the appropriate legislative review agency referred to in Senate Bill 180. This subcommittee and then the full Ways and Means will have to approve fees as on page 3 of the budget, which is the second page of the handout I've given you, $25 for initial certification of the euthanasia technician, $25 annual employer certification fee, and a $10 proposed annual certified euthanasia recertification fee. So if the committee can support those fees, that is the first action we need to take. And then, if I may, the co-chairs would like me to read into the record that we, if we do decide to pass this bill out, it will be with the understanding that farmers, ranchers, and other individuals will not be required to go to a veterinary for vaccines and other items necessary to preserve the health of their livestock. And I think if we pass it with the understanding, I can go over the bill afterwards, and if there's any problem, we'll bring it back to the subcommittee. But we've been assured that in the Be Engrossed version, there should be no problem with farmers and ranchers being able to obtain these vaccines and other medical.
Will the board provide that assurance?
That's the way the bill reads.
Say it again. Just say, tell us.
There
what
is.
Do you think Jack meant when he said those words?
Yes, I agree with what Jack says. That bill does not require farmers, ranchers, and so forth to purchase vaccines only from veterinarians.
Representative Jones.
Yeah, what section is that in?
I believe, and maybe the
it's in the original statute. And
yeah, Mr. Chairman, if you look on page 3, section 3, and subsection 7, the board by rule may specify circumstances under which unlicensed persons may give vaccinations. And I think if you go on and read the rest of it, and so all they, if that's Nan Dewey, who also represents the veterinarian doctors, and all they do is want the legislative intent as part of the record, given the assurance that the board will adopt rules to exempt out those people in agriculture that are not required to come and get vaccinations through a veterinarian.
They say that they may specify circumstances under which, and I don't think that's we've done that for 100 years, and we need to continue to do it and not be bound. No. And it's very easy to just say that, not give them the authority to by rule or may or shall or anything else. But you can, I'll vote the damn thing.
I don't know why it would take very long to put that in writing and in the bill.
There's no sense of that kind of language being in there. I'll help you get it out, but I won't support it.
I guess let me just raise 2 points. One is that the bill has passed the Senate in the original form. That's probably no concern, although
it doesn't make any difference to us.
All right. There may be circumstances where a person other than a cattle rancher, farmer, or other person may be using these vaccines or other things inappropriately. And I think that this bill is just trying to allow the board to have some authority in those instances where it isn't a person with a legitimate agricultural use to be carrying out these procedures.
Legitimate agricultural use. Why don't we amend it, make sure that they can't interfere with legitimate agricultural use.
That's fine. They nothing in my statement had anything to do with what
that's
what
right. Jack is. That's exactly right.
Just to protect in our backsides and the cost of vaccine and in our regular thing that we've been doing for 100 years.
Absolutely.
We're still doing, and that's just what I intend to do.
Why don't we just amend the bill that way? And that way we have it in writing. Senator Hannah?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, before you do that, can I ask Mr. Dewey a question?
Mr. Dewey.
Were you involved in the actual writing of Senate Bill 180 on the Senate side? And maybe I read the wrong provision. Can you point out the exact provision that exempts agriculture, such as cattle farmers or cattle ranchers? Well, I may have read the wrong section, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to mislead the committee on it.
Chairperson McCracken, Senator Hannon, in our original statute, which this bill has amends, there is section 686040 sub 2. Nothing in this chapter shall be so construed as to prevent any person or the agent or employee of the person from practicing veterinary medicine and surgery or dentistry in a humane manner on any animal belonging to the person, agent, or employee, or for gratuitous services or for or from dehorning and vaccinating cattle for the person, agent, and employee.
Why then, Mr. Chairman, would this even put in that individual?
That particular Representative Jones, to answer your question, that particular section was put in, the one that Senator Hannon read, was put in more to cover the certification of technicians and stating what they can administer and what they can't administer.
So they don't get into the practice of veterinary medicine.
Uh-huh.
These are only licensed technicians.
This ball is not moving until Representative Jones achieves a satisfactory comfort level. And I don't think sticking some words in there, making sure that there's no interference with legitimate agricultural uses, would do it.
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, I don't see the need for putting that in there. If it's in the original statute that we can do that, then they're saying in this particular section or subsection that they may specify by rule on circumstances where you have to get your vaccine from a veterinary or whatever, and it just gives them the authority, even whether it's may or shall or whatever.
Representative Jones, that section does in no way give the board authority to state where anybody purchases vaccines from anyone. The section Senator Hannon read, subsection 7, states that the board may specify the intent of that was to specify what vaccinations a technician may give. For instance, we have had numerous veterinarians call us up and say, may technicians give rabies vaccines? We talked to the state veterinarian. They said no. We want to be able to specify that in a rule. If you will look in your copies of the Bee and Gross bill higher on page 3 at line 7, you will find that we have left our original statute wording intact. What I read to you previously saying, nothing shall be so construed as to prevent any person or the agent from treating animals in a humane manner that belong to them, that remains there. We have not changed that. Mm-hmm. We have not the manpower nor the desire to go forth and supervise the purchase of vaccines.
So basically what the Section 7 that was referenced by Senator Hannon is just because of the new law that allows you to regulate euthanasia technicians, giving you some authority to set those standards that those euthanasia technicians operate under.
Right, yes. That does not apply. Right, exactly.
And so perhaps the statement into the record was not necessary, however, to be on the safe side. I think we should stay with it.
Yes. Okay, I'm now satisfied that the bill probably doesn't need amending and that Representative Jones' concerns are in statute.
I think he's got a legitimate concern, but I think it's been addressed.
It's in statute and it's in writing. Mr. Dewey?
Yes, for the record, Mike Dewey, Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. The intent has never been to in any way preclude what cattle producers, livestock producers have been doing. We want to make that very clear. Senator Thorne had concerns about this when the bill was working its way through the Senate. We discussed those numerous times, and we wanted to make that clear, and I think that language that is current law does that. I know Dr. Cunningham is here.